All right, good morning. German punctuality right on time, so let's get started. Alex and I, we wanted to introduce you to one of our smaller projects. We call it Restic, and catchy tagline, at least catchy enough to drag you all in here. So this morning when we start to talk about the project, Alex is the lead developer, so he will then drive you through the tests and the live demonstration. I will talk a little bit about the project background, so why did we feel that we need another backup solution, what are the design principles along which we develop Restic, some of the features and key components, and what we do differently compared to other solutions. And yeah, as mentioned, Alex will go through a quick demonstration and also explain the technical background on chunking and cryptography. And then obviously we'll talk a little bit about the project and also how you can contribute, and we count on your contribution as well. And also we'll leave a little room for some questions and answers. So why did we feel that we need another backup solution? Alex and I, we have some mutual infrastructure that we use, and we have also thought about, okay, backup might be a good thing to do, at least at one point in time. So we shared a backup server in a location that we felt is only partially secure. And this security is, okay, we wanted to do cryptography, but the server is hosted in a location, we won't tell you where someone else might tamper with the system or might even get access to the system. So we felt that we would like to have a proper backup solution. So we tested a multitude of backup programs and also tried like using EncFS over SSHFS and other things. And yeah, obviously they didn't work so well. And this is why we started the project. And our use case was nothing special, so we didn't want to back up like huge amounts of pictures or data. It was really like a usual working directory. Here in this example, it's 16 gigs of files, 140k files, and 36k directories, which is some source code, images, audio files, some pictures. So really nothing special. And the solutions that we tried out were mostly slow, and particularly over WAN connections, and latency was an issue that we came across. And some of the programs, especially the older ones, they don't have cryptography or no deduplication, and mostly not any of the two. And the usability was also somewhat cumbersome with some of the programs that we tried. So we had configuration files, or they had to read chunks of the data and decrypt it before you can append a new backup. So these were the things that we came across, and that's why we started off with discussing about the design principles and what we feel a good backup solution should look. So it should be easy. So if it's not easy, you wouldn't do it, most likely. And I'm wondering who of you would say wholeheartedly that you have a current backup of all of your data. And we also want it to be scriptable, so you can run it when you log off, and it should be pretty fast as well. So the only limitations should be like external factors, network, throughput through your hardware or such, and it shouldn't be limited with the software itself. It should be verifiable. So we wanted to check the integrity of the data at the backup destination and without decrypting it. So Alex will explain a little bit about how we've achieved that to avoid, for example, bit rotting on the backup location. So you can easily do a SHA-2-SOM on the backup destination, and you can verify whether your integrity is there or if someone probably has tampered with the data. Secure. So as mentioned initially, we thought the backup location might not be trustworthy. So that was one of the design principles. So we assume that the backup destination is never trustworthy. Another user might have root on the system or just physical access to the software. We also want to authenticate the backup on restore. So when you read the backup, it should be verified if the backup was modified or not. Efficient. So in some of the backup solutions, you would need to take a decision whether you take a full backup or an increment. And this is something that we didn't want to do, or you do like regular full backups to not pile up in increments when you eventually restore it. So that's also something that we looked into, and we do a deduplication not only on file base, but on chunks of data. So that's also that some of the solutions did lack. Yeah, and of course it's free software, that's why we are here. And we use GitHub and have a pretty transparent development process. And we even internally use a small development workflow. So we review what one of our fellow developers is doing before committing it to the repository. So a quick glance at the features. So we support Linux, OS X on Darwin, all the BSD variants, and Windows. Just yet, we do deduplication, as just mentioned. The repository format, and that was also one of the design principles, is stable and extendable. So it's JSON, so we can extend it and without losing compatibility with prior versions. So that was also one of the design goals. It's already pretty fast. So our use case today that we will show you is a USB 3 hard drive that we have with us. And Alex will show you what the throughput is a little later. You can use one backup repository for multiple machine backups. And you can, when you have different sources and you eventually use this for restoring to different machines at a later point in time, or the you have the same data on the machines, you can backup to the same repository, and deduplication is also working there. We have pluggable backends, and we felt that this is very important. So you can use local storage, SFTP is built in, we have AWS S3 support, and some more to come. Restoring backups can be a little cumbersome. So take a tar archive and you only want to restore one file, so it can be a pretty lengthy process when you just want to restore that one file. So we thought we want to have browsable backups. So we have a view support, and Alex will also show how that works, how you can browse a backup, and you can just copy that one file out of the backup to your restore destination. And also a small embedded web server is about to be committed, so you can browse then also your backups with this small web server. So some of the key components, I was explaining the functions. So it's the functions that all the backup solutions might have. So the archiver is taking care of the backup, the restorer, obviously, of the restore, the fuse mount, and the checker. The checker is the integrity check component that can verify if the backup is persistent. They use the repository, and the repository makes use of the chunker. And Alex will also explain a little bit how we do chunking, or in particular, content-defined chunking here. And the repository will also make use of the cryptography before it writes it to one of the pluggable backends. What's very important is the interface for the backends is relatively simple. So new backends can be integrated fairly easily. So I think that's already the point when you wanted to start off with a quick demonstration, Alex. So I think I need to hand over the microphone to you.
So yeah, hi. We just have one microphone, so we have to switch it, and we have to switch it back again, but I don't think that this is a huge problem. So the RESTIC implementation at the moment is written in Go. That's a fairly new language developed by Google. It's a static compiled language, and it has a fairly good integrated testing support, for example. And yeah, my original choice to write it in Go was just to play around with Go. And so far, it was a very good decision for that. For the cryptography, we use AES and the Poly 1305 signature MAC algorithm. That's also quite fast. Many of the ideas in RESTIC come from things like Git or CamelyStore. CamelyStore is a Go implementation of a data sharing and data backup system. And it also took a lot of ideas from Git. One of the ideas was that we address things by, we have content addressable storage, like the address for storing something like a chunk of data is something like the SHA-2 sum of the data itself. We will see that in a moment. For the metadata, something like directory structures, file names, and so on, we use JSON. That's, I think, not an obvious choice for a backup system, but we found that it was fast enough. And JSON is really extendable. So if you have new fields that are present in a later version of the repository, you can also read it with an older version of RESTIC because the fields are just ignored, so it's extendable. For the key derivation function, at the moment only backups are secured by a password, but you cannot really use a password as a direct input for the AES encryption function. You need a key derivation function, and for that we need SCrypt to be as secure as possible. It's one of the better choices for a key derivation function. What we also do, we do content-defined chunking. We will come to that in a bit. That's done by Rabin fingerprinting, and I wrote an implementation in Go for Rabin fingerprinting, and it's already really fast, although it's only written in Go. It's not like it's written in assembler or C yet, but it's an optimization that's quite possible. So for the content-defined chunking, for example, you have a file, and you would like to backup it, and what RESTIC does, it computes a Rabin fingerprint, of 64-bit over a sliding window of 64 bytes. So for each window of 64 bytes, it computes the fingerprints, and at the fingerprint below, you can see that it is always different for each 64 window of bytes. At some point in time, it will compute a fingerprint that has the lowest 20 bits set to zero. And this is one of the point where I define that the current chunk has ended and a new chunk is about to start. So, for example, in this case, the upper file already has this first chunk. The first chunk was already found, and then it computes all the other chunks. And you can see that in the picture, the light orange box in there is the 64 byte before the end of the chunk that defines the chunk point. And in this case, we have four chunks for this file. If you modify the file, for example, you change something in the first chunk, like there's an X and you make it a Y or something like that, then RESTIC will detect that the first chunk has changed, but the address or the end of the first chunk hasn't changed. So all the other chunks are the same again. The same is if you modify, for example, the second chunk and make it a shorter one, but don't change the 64 bytes before the end of the chunk, RESTIC will detect the same cut point and all the other chunks at the end of the file are the same again. So you can move chunks around and you can modify chunks and all the others will stay the same. So the deduplication really detects very well if you move stuff in the file around, something like that. So the basic repository structure, like in this example, it's always the local storage in a directory, but basically all the other backends are modeled like this. You have a file called config. Everything on the slides that is painted with a slight red background is encrypted, and everything that's not with a white background is in plain text. So you have a config file that is encrypted, and you have a number of key files. It's in the directory keys. And you can already see there that the file names are the first three bytes in this example, the first three bytes of the SHA-2 checksum of the contents. So in reality, it's longer, but on the slides, I've shortened it to just the first three bytes or six characters. So each repository has a number of key files. A key file looks like this. It has a JSON structure in plain text. There is some metadata on it, and it has a salt and data. And usually, I enter my password into RESTIC, and then RESTIC tries to load all the key files and tries to decrypt the data that is in the key file with the key that is derived via SCrypt from the password. And what's in the data basically is the master key for the repository. It's designed something like Lux, if you know Linux file encryption. There you already also have a master key for a volume, and we have a header with key slots and have a password for each key slot. So once I've entered the correct password, RESTIC is able to decrypt the config file. And in this case, when I say decrypt, I always meant decrypt and authenticate the ciphertext before trying to actually decrypt something. So if an attacker is about to tamper with like the config file or exchange it for something, I can detect it before I even try to decrypt it. So once I have the master password, then I can, for example, decrypt one of the snapshots. A snapshot is meant something like a file system structure at one point in time. So each time you take a backup, you get a new snapshot. We will see that in a moment. In this case, the snapshot after decryption yields a JSON structure. And in there, you have, for example, the path that has been backupped. In this case, it's home FT0 web. That's one of my work directories. You can see it was made on the hostname Casimir, and it was my user and so on, and the point in time at which it was taken. There are some other fields in it. And this basically references a tree. A tree is in a SHA-2 hash again, 86FB and so on. And then from the repository, you can load this tree, identified by the SHA-2 sum of the contents of the JSON structure. And in there, you have a list of nodes. In this case, you can see that there is one directory, it's called web, and one file, it's called file.tar.bzip2. And for the web directory, you have another hint for a subtree, 6.2, 6.9, and so on. So if you were to restore this web directory, you need to fetch this subtree in the next step. If you want to restore this file, then you have, like in this case, three different SHA-2 sums of chunks. And this is just the SHA-2 sum of the raw content chunk that has been there in this order. So the file can be restored by just fetching these three chunks from the repository, writing them to a file in this order, and then you will have the file again. So one thing I haven't told you up to now is that I don't save, or RESTIC say it doesn't save any metadata or any chunk to a file directly, but it packs on, or bundles them together in several chunks are bundled together in a pack file. And this looks like this. All the things in the pack file, there is a tree, there's data, and at the end there is a header. And the header just lists all the things that are in the file. The pack file itself isn't encrypted, but the chunks are encrypted all by themselves. So I can reorder them or restructure them without having to re-encrypt everything. In order to speed up the finding process, because otherwise, if I don't have like an index or something, then RESTIC needs to fetch all the headers of all the pack files to find where are the trees and where are the data chunks stored. In this case, I have an index that's just an optimization, and you don't really need it, but it's needed to be efficient and to be fast. And it lists, like, in the data pack 7b and so on, there are these blobs, and these are of type tree or of type data. And if you have a look at the tree again on the right side, you can see that the subtree 6.2 isn't painted on this slide, but the content blobs 3f, 6.3, and dd, they are also in this pack file. So if you need to fetch that, then I can restore it. So this was a lot of theory, and then I would like to do some demonstration for that. I'm going to sit down now. So let me see. Okay, can you see that? Okay, great. So the first thing, I've attached this USB storage device here, and it's on... Oh, no. It sleeps. Find mount. So it's just a USB device connected over USB 3. The first thing I need to do with RESTIC is you need to initialize a repository. That's really easy to do. You have this RESTIC command. You've already installed it, for example. And there you can do minus R or repository USB, and then you do init. And then you need to enter a password that's really similar to Lux, like Lux format. Then you have this repository. It has an ID that is saved in the content that's just used for recognizing which repositories have been already backed up. Then you can do a backup, for example, of my directory data. Let me just give you a few hints. That data is at the moment with made up something that resembles a normal working directory. It's 2 gigabytes, and there are files and videos and MP3s and everything in it, and a few kernel images and Debian ISOs. If you would like to backup this, you need to give RESTIC the backup location, this B, then backup, and then just the directory that should be backed up, and we need the password again. And as you can see there, it's quite fast, like 70 megabytes per second. And this is a normal working speed if you have like AES and I, these extensions in the CPU that speed up AES computation. And it will take about like 10 seconds. So, okay, demonstration always takes longer. So in this case, it's done. We can do another backup again, just to be sure. And there you can see that it already knows all the structures, it knows the files and the modification times, and it doesn't have to backup anything else. So now I've done, like three backups, and the command snapshots. I can list what backups did I made and what directories have been backed up and so on. In order to not have to type this repository location again, we can also export it in an environment variable. And there you can just use this one. You can also export the password, but I will type it for demonstration purposes. Okay. So if I'm about to do something with my data, in this case I have this, for example, I have a large Debian ISO, and let's say I have another version of this ISO in a file called foo. There you can see that it takes up twice the space because it's not a deduplicating file system. But if I'm about to back up this directory again, so we don't need that anymore. So you can see it is still quite fast. This 800 megabyte per second or something like that is not really, but it's using the already known chunks when the new ISO file is read to recognize that these chunks have already been saved. So they are not transmitted and not saved in the repository again. We can, for example, check that what's the size. It's, Yeah, there are 2.1 gigabyte. And this is just the size of the data directory, or it's just even, that's even a bit larger because of the second ISO file that I put there. Okay, so if I'm about to restore something, we all hope that this point in time never comes, but sometimes you have to restore things from the backup. Then you can, for example, have a look at which snapshots are there. And there you can see that, for example, this this last backup, I would like to have a look at it. Yeah, we can use ls with a... So there you can see that these are all the files that are in there. Okay, it's not wide enough, so I will just use this. Yeah, you can see the directory structure. And, for example, there's this last file. It's a markdown file of my notes here. And if I would like to restore that, we can use restic restore to temp restore. And I can use either this complete backup, or I can, for example, like include star.md, so only MD files are restored. Okay, and when I have a look at temp restore, there you can see there's data Vortrag and there are my notes. Okay, and this is quite cumbersome, I think, because even I, as a developer for RESTIC, need to remember all the command line switches and so on. So we also added the possibility to mount this repository via Fuse. And I will mount it in my home directory in a file, in a directory called MNT. And now I'm creating a new tab. And we'll have just a look at the MNT thing. There's a snapshots, and there are directories for all of the snapshots. And I've been using the last one. There you can see there's this data, Vortrag.md, and I can cat it, and it will work. And for demonstration purposes, we also included a large video from the Blender project in the videos directory. It's quite large. It's and we can even play that one. Oh, where it is? Nope. Ah, it's gone. I have no idea where the window went. Ah, there it is. Yeah, you can see that it's a full HD thing, and it's plays really, really fast over the fuse, of the fuse mount from the USB 3 device. And you can also like browse pictures, MNT pictures, and they have taken some. And I can even browse the older versions of files there. Like these are my holiday pictures, and you can view the pictures and so on. And if I'm about to look at what has changed, remember I've added the foo file, which was a copy of the Debian ISO file in one of the later snapshots. We can, for example, look at the first one and have like data Debian ISO, and there is this one Debian ISO file. And if I'm looking at the later one, there I can see that there is also the foo file, and I can mount that, copy that away, or have a look at it and browse the files. I use diff, for example, that's also possible. Okay. Afterwards, don't forget to unmount it. Okay, this was a quick demonstration. The current status is that we have released the first version. The repository format is quite stable, and we would like to have users using it now. So we are trying to make really sure we're using semantic versioning. And we're making sure that the repository format is always compatible. So you, when you do some backups now, you're able to restore them and access them in a year or something like that. We need to implement more backends like Google Cloud Storage Nearline, Amazon Glacier, and so on. We'd like to do user interface improvements. For example, the restore workflow is too complicated at the moment. Maybe add a dialog-based system for that. We would like to add compression. We would like to resume interrupted backups and, yeah, of course, more performance. Maybe support the workflow to do asymmetric crypto on the backups so you can have a server with important data on it and do some backups for this server. And when a server is hacked, the attackers doesn't have access to all the old backups. They are unable to decrypt them because the private key used to decrypt data is not on the server. And other workflows like reading a backup from standard in, think MySQL dump, for example. Getting started is really easy. You can clone the repository CD into the repository and just type go ran build.go. It will take care of all the usual stuff you have to figure out while using or compiling a Go program. And then you can use init and backup, and that's it. At the moment, it's free software. It will stay free software, of course. It's a two-clause BSD license. You can find the repository there. We're using some kind of like an agile workflow as far as you can talk about agile when developing an open source project with a really distributed developer base. At the moment, we have three contributors that do core development and 12 other contributors, and some are even present here. Thanks a lot for your contribution. You can help by use RESTIC, report bugs. We are sure that there are bugs hidden in there. We are really grateful for all the reports that point bugs out to us, because then we can fix them. And of course, also request features that we may haven't seen up to now. Okay, do you have any questions? Yeah, please.
Is it possible to give names to
snapshots? At the moment, it's not possible, but there is an issue about adding like tags to snapshots. And that's really easy to implement, because we can add a tags field to the JSON structure. And you can do something like that.
And we take this as a plus one for that issue.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. No.
I'm not sure if you answered the question, but I want to ask the same. You have that list of snapshots, and the only thing you have is the date.
Yes, and the...
I'm very interested to be able to add a string at the moment when I...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can add that. The text issue is something like adding a string to a backup while making the backup, and we can implement that. If you're interested in that, we take that as a plus one to implement this feature. And it might become a little bit hard to find a specific backup when you have a lot of backups in there. So it's a good idea. Yeah.
Is there a way of organizing nightly unattended packets, like with using some private public key instead of having someone type the password?
The question was if it is possible to do automated backups nightly, something like that. At the moment, we only have the possibility to access the repo with a password. So you can export the password in an environment variable and have RESTIC use that. This asymmetric workflow that you're talking about, like using a public key to encrypt data that cannot be decrypted again with this public key, but require the private key for decryption. And I think that's what you're talking about. It's not implemented at the moment, but it's planned. Okay. Yeah, please.
When you want to backup to a remote location, do I have to install RESTIC on the system where the important data lies, or do I have to install it on the system where the backup location is?
The question was what software requirements are needed for a remote location. At the moment, we have several backends that don't require installing anything else. So, for example, we have SFTP implemented, and it really only uses the SFTP protocol. So you just have to be able to use the SFTP client to connect to a server and have them something like OpenSSH running and providing an SFTP server. That's enough. It's not the most efficient way to do it because SFTP was designed in a time where people thought it was a good idea to hard code like buffer sizes and so on. So we have to, in order to transfer large amounts of data, we have to transfer really small buffers. So it's not the most efficient backend, but it's possible and doesn't need any installing anything else.
We had a question over here.
Yeah.
To
what?
Your demonstration was a code there.
Yeah.
So no file was attached. You're in fact, okay, we're part two, we have transactions that will be added at the end or something like this, like database backups.
Mm-hmm. Your question was, is it possible to do
hot backup
of...
I in use when you are doing backup that at the end of your backup that the transactions for the file and the changes will be
Okay, at the moment it's not possible. You have to build something around it, like for example an LVM snapshot of a currently in use file system, so you have a specific snapshot of your file system at some point in time. For Windows, there is this shadow copy service who provides nearly the same. It's not implemented in RESTIC at the moment, but it's certainly possible to either do that around the backup program, around the backup process, for example, for VM images, or even included in RESTIC, but it's not included at the moment. What is an encrypted directory in your case?
So you have. Back up more directories than
one. RESTIC at the moment. RESTIC just uses the normal kernel interface to like list the directory and open the files. And
you need the key for the project. So when you, for example, you want to back up all home directories, and they are encrypted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can either back up the encrypted directory from the outside, so that the encrypted directory is saved in the backup, and when you restore, then you can you also restore the encrypted directory and need the user to enter his password, for example, to decrypt it again. Or you can have a user like unlocking his home directory and encrypt or backupping the plain text files. There is no integrated, like, decrypting something like an encrypted home directory at the moment. Yeah, that's one possibility, yeah.
Okay. Question about the dependency. I guess in your Go project, you have different dependencies. Do you have, like, locked dependency in
At the moment, the repository or the complete project just uses a Go compiler. As a dependency. We use some external Go libraries, but they are all included in the repository in the vendor directory. So we can have like a deterministic building for something. If I'm using this version of the Go compiler under Linux and somebody else uses the same Go compiler under Linux, the same binary, then it will result in the same RESTIC binary. And having the dependencies vendored in the GitHub repo also means that I'm able to like use git bisect on all my dependencies. That's really nice.
Do you have any plans like building distro packages or getting into official?
Yeah, we are trying to build distro packages. It's a small process because you have to do it for all the different distros. At the moment, there are packages like for Arch Linux and Homebrew on Mac, and we will probably add others. It's just we have released the first release in just like a few days ago. And we need to do some more tests, some more backups, and over time we will insert it into the distributions.
And my last question, how do you handle CLINT or links in
all the special files are already handled, at least under Linux and BSD and Darwin. So symlinks are backup as what they are, symlinks. And we can even backup like device files, character devices, and so on. And for hard links, the implementation isn't finished at the moment.
Thomas had a question.
Good question, yeah. The question was if we have implemented a way to remove old backups. I've heard that other backup systems lack this possibility at the moment. At the moment, it's not finished, but it's, we already started the process. You can, I've shown you that there is, for each snapshot, there is a file in the repository. You can remove that and run the check process, which will detect that there are dangling blobs that aren't used anymore, and in the future it will be able to remove them and repack the others that are maybe used in the same pack file. So there is a pull request outstanding, and I'm working on it at the moment. Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Are you taking care of the extended attributes and security labels under labels?
The question was... if we already take care of extended attributes and security attributes in Linux, for example, at the moment the answer, unfortunately, is no, because we've just started. But it's an issue in the GitHub, and we're planning to implement that. Unfortunately, at least from my point of view, the ACL handling isn't standardized across different operating systems, so we have to do an implementation for like each operating system. So it will take some time, but it is planned to also back up this. Next question.
You said that the indexing files are stored unencrypted.
No, they are also stored encrypted. Everything is encrypted except these things that you need to derive the master key password. Like everything except the key files is stored encrypted.
But the key files don't have any information about the structure of the files.
No, they don't know anything. In the key files, you can think of something like a Luke's key slot. It basically just holds a timestamp and a salt and the encrypted data for the master key. That's it. Everything else is encrypted.
Do you have a structure in your repositories, or do you store all the JSON files in one?
Oh, no. The question was if you have a structure with subdirectories, and yes, we have a structure with subdirectories to account for like having a repository with many files. So there is one subdirectory level for the data files.
One?
Yeah, at the moment. No, because when we have the question was if we store these all the different JSON files in a lot of small files, and now we're bundling them together up to like 20K JSON structure files if they are really small in one file. So we are bundling the files together, so we don't have so many small files.
Can I add a backup? Because I'm thinking about, we have some very crazy laws in Germany, like destroying duty. Mm-hmm. And so you might have the need to get a single datum out of your backup. Mm-hmm. So is it possible to edit your backup and hide it from the backup, or edit deleting a pull file? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the question was if we need to implement like German data laws that require destructing data or removing data from a backup, at the moment this is not implemented, but we have an issue about that, exactly about the thing like, by accident I committed the password file with the secret data in it to the backup, and I need to remove that from every revision. And it's possible, but we have to rewrite the data. The basic attributes of the repository structure is that things stored there are just written once. So if you have to change something, you read it and you write a new version again and then remove the old version and need to correct all the references in the JSON files. It's not impossible, but at the moment not implemented. Okay.
If everything is encrypted, even the JSON files, how are you going to implement the asymmetric encryption?
Good question. We don't have a plan for that right now that is completely ready. We've already have a discussion in the issue describing this asymmetric use case, because we need to understand what is the exact use case for it. It's not so easy, because there might be many different use cases. For example, this, I'm using RESTIC to backup a server and afterwards restore it. And if the server is hacked, the backup system or the data in the backup, the old data especially, should not be accessible. That's just one use case. One of the ideas was that maybe different keys are used to encrypt like data and metadata. And for example, that when a system is doing backups with RESTIC and it just has the private key for decrypting the metadata again in order to do efficiently backups, but it doesn't have the private key for the data on it. But this really depends on your use case. So maybe you would also like to have the metadata encrypted only in one way, and you have like a local cache, for example. We need to discuss that and afterwards plan what we're going to implement.
I see
is that you can verify the data integrity on the server without having the decryption key. How do you do it?
Good question. The question was, we advertised that it was possible to verify that there was no bit rot or the backup data on the server hasn't changed. And what RESTIC basically does is everything that is saved on the server in a remote location is the file name is always the SHA-2 sum of the contents, of the encrypted contents. So on the server, you can just run like SHA-256 sum on the files with a script or something like that. It will read the files, output the SHA-2 hash of it, and you can compare it to the file name, even without decrypting anything. That doesn't protect against attackers that are able to write the repository because they can like modify some file there and move it to a new file name that the hash corresponds again. But you can check, for example, if the hard disk is faulty or the RAM is faulty, and during write if something went wrong or so. Okay. I don't understand the question. Can you? I think the question was that if it is possible to use public or private cloud implementations to store the backups. And at the moment, it's, for example, possible to use S3 by Amazon to store data. The backend is implemented. But other backends are not implemented at the moment, for example, for own cloud or like Google Drive or something like that. But we tried to make the interface for implementing a backup really small and really easy to implement, so it should be easy to add that. And, for example, for the Google Cloud or for Amazon Glacier, there are already Go libraries that do the interface for you. You just have to adapt it to be used as a backend in RESTIC.
Are the file system differences are handled? For example, if I back up a Linux file system onto an NTFS system, there is no symbolic links. Mm-hmm. Is this handled in RESTIC?
The question was, what happens if I back up a symlink on Linux and restore it on an NTFS file system on Windows? And the general policy for these kinds of things is that RESTIC will output a warning that is not possible to like extract a symlink. In the case of a symlink, it might be possible to just add a symbolic link or something like that in the NTFS file system. But the general policy is to output an error about it that it's not possible to restore this type of file on this file system and continue to restore other things. Yeah, that's no problem at all. The question was if it is possible to back up a system in a little endian system, like where the byte order is starting with the lowermost byte, and restore it on a big endian system, and that's no problem at all, because on the data side, we're just moving bytes from the files to the backup repository and back again. And for everything else, that it's metadata, that's either JSON, like ASCII encoded numbers, and that doesn't depend on the byte order. And there's one exception for the PEC files. We have a little, small format for bundling the PEC files together. And one of the fields there is the length of the chunk, and this is defined as to be little endian. So it's no problem at all.
Can I change the encryption key?
The question was if you can change the encryption key. Question back to you: what encryption key do you mean, the master key or the password?
I thought the master key derived from the normal passphrase
the S-Crypt function, yeah.
The idea behind my question was if I have a backup running for half a year or so, I might think it's a good idea to change the password.
Mm-hmm.
What if goes away,
So the question was, what happens if somebody gets my password? Or is it possible to change my password for the backup remote backend at some point in time, like every half year or so? The answer is that the master key is always for a repository, and you cannot easily change that. But we have this one level of indirection by using the password that the user supplies to derive a key to decrypt the master key. So the design is really similar to Lux again, where you have a password and you can use that to decrypt the master key and with the master key decrypt the device. And it's possible to have multiple passwords and it's possible to change the password. But if an attacker has access to the backup location, the attacker is able to just make a backup of the old key file. It's the same for Lux. If I have an attacker who has copied my complete device, including the Lux header, and afterwards learns my password, he can use that with the Lux header that he has already saved. So changing the password in this case doesn't give you anything, but you can do it, and it's implemented. Next question?
Yeah. I think you said somewhere that you use AES counter mode. How do you handle the counter?
The question was, how do we initialize the counters for AES encryption? Because AES counter mode encryption, when you use that, you have to make sure that you use really random counters. And in this case, it's generated, a random counter value is generated. So we have we generate an IV, it's 16 bytes of random with a cryptographically secure pseudo-random number generator. And we use that and flip the bits and increment them for counter mode. It's a standard practice for that. So we have this really, really, really small chance that two initialization vectors will be completely different for 16 bytes of random, but it's really unlikely.
Okay. What would be your recommended approach to convert an existing backup to a RESTful format? Like, for example, I'm having on target, I'm already having in the file system, I don't want to copy everything again with RESTful. Okay. But just saying, well, this is what I have, take this for the first run, and then proceed from there.
The question was, what are the migration strategies from if I have a remote location where I've already backed up all my data to, do I need to back up this again in order to use RESTIC? And my recommendation would be if the remote location is somewhat trustworthy, so you trust it to store your data for a short amount of time, you can extract your data there. It depends on the format, what you have there. You could extract your data there, run RESTIC once with all the data there, remove it again, and then use RESTIC from your original location. Because then you have a repository that is initialized with all your data already, all the chunks are there, all the directory structures are there, and RESTIC will just use that for deduplication. So you're not only transmitting the data that is new and hasn't been stored on the backup location.
So it recognizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially the data. So if a data chunk is in the repository, it will always use that one in the repository and not store it again. Yeah.
Can you exclude the data? Like, for example, don't back it up by
mm-hmm. The question was if it is possible to exclude files or directories, and yes, that's possible. We have a simple exclude command line switch for the backup already. And there are plans to, implement a more sophisticated one where you can have a file with patterns or directories that aren't to be backupped or something like that. It's it's possible and it will be possible in the future to do more things.
Can you do the same thing based on the size? So do not backup files bigger than something also.
Oh, interesting use case. The question was if it's possible to exclude files based on the size, like do not backup small files or do not backup especially large files. I haven't thought about that up to now, but maybe if it's interesting, we will implement it. It should be really easy to do.
Sometimes it's interesting for bootstrapping a new backup. You first want to backup all the small files because mm-hmm. sometimes they're really important, but your latest Debian ISO is maybe not that important. Mm-hmm. So you just backup first all the small things and later you go to the bigger ones.
Yeah, so for example, when you initialize a backup, I'm repeating the question for the audience later. When you want to do an initial backup of your working directory, you would like to exclude all the large Debian ISO files because they don't need to be backed up. And it's not possible, but we will consider adding it.
And we appreciate the issue about
GitHub. Yeah. Okay, any questions? Yeah, please. Okay, also good question. Yeah.
Should be Berlin because only compares change data and you only store change data, so when you backup is added. Yeah, you only
So the question was, how can I make a really fast backup on a local hard drive, but replicate this repository to another location? And as you already suggested, you can just use rsync to just transfer the files and transfer the updated files. And it's even possible to just use the new files, because RESTIC always will add files and do not change them. So once they are in the repository, they are not changed, but there are new files created and maybe files removed if we remove a snapshot, for example. So just moving the files to a remote location, that is sufficient. You can just restore them from the remote location. That's possible. Okay, any other questions? Yeah?
Can you say something about sparse files?
The question was if RESTIC handles sparse files. At the moment, RESTIC doesn't handle sparse files specifically. Sparse files are files that have like holes in them. When you read them, you will get a whole bunch of zeros. But the deed application already is able to handle this case fairly well, because when I read large amounts of zeros, then I will recognize that this is a block of zeros. Oh, I already have that one, and don't save it to the backup again. But we maybe will add sparse file support by recognizing these special holes in the files and handle them specially, because we don't have to like read all the zeros if we know there are only zeros. We can just add that to the metadata information.
No support for restoring currently?
No, at the moment there's no support for restoring. When you restore a sparse file, you will end up with a non-sparse file filled with zeros. That's a limitation at the moment. We will add that later on. Did you also have a question? Ah, okay. That was already answered. Yeah, yeah.
One question about the file. Might really slow when you have many files in one directory.
The question was, when there are really a lot of files in the repository, won't it get slow if on at least some file system, if there are something like 10,000 files in a directory? And for that, we have in the data directory, we already have one level of subdirectories and store the files there. So the first byte is actually used for creating a subdirectory. And we will probably add more if this becomes a problem in the future. But at the moment, it's just one level. And the repository is also, there you can see it. The repository is also structured in a way that like snapshots and, for example, data files are in different directories, because the snapshots, RESTIC must be able to like efficiently list them and read them in order to display them to the user or find the latest snapshot the current backup is based on. So we moved that to a different directory and the data files in another directory. Yeah?
Just a short comment. You showed that you only use one byte for this directory. You could just easily use two bytes and have a single level, but just have 64K directories instead of 256.
Yeah, we could have also used like two bytes, but at the moment it's one byte, and when it becomes a problem, we will deal with it or make it configurable or something like that. Yeah. The question was if we need a special file system so if we need a special file system for the repository that holds the backup data. And I don't think that we have any limitation like this, but the limit you mentioned, like 32K files for X2, it might become a problem if you back up to X2. But please give it a try. If you run into this limitation, write an issue and we will deal with it. Okay, yeah. When the directory changes that you backed up, or
The file, the directory that you want to back up. You said that you make a snapshot of it before. And what happens if the file that the directory has changed after you made the snapshot?
The question was what happens if a file is changed while the snapshot is running, or while the snapshot hasn't finished. For example, when you back up a large directory, some files might change in between. For example,
I move a directory from a part where you have done the snapshot
Okay, the example was a file was moved. A file has been backupped already, but the backup process wasn't finished, and you move it while the backup is running to a different directory that is, again, backed up later. In this case, RESTIC will include the newly moved file in the backup a second time, but it won't save any new data because of the deduplication, because all the data in the file has already been saved to the repository. It will just include like a reference to this data in the metadata again. Okay, any other questions? Okay, then. Thanks a lot for listening. Give it a try and report all bugs that you may find. Thank you.